This is my first question. In-N-Out or Five Guys?
I don't know that I've ever had either of them.
That's a first.
I live in Africa, so you see. This is my poor, suffering African missionary answer.
Yeah. I may need to find a new question
for
this.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I've ruined this for you.
Wow. Do you have a favorite hamburger?
Yes.
Okay, what's your favorite hamburger?
Okay, this is really random. There is a mall in Nairobi where they have an ostrich burger.
Really?
Check that out. It's pretty good.
What is it? Is it kind of like a turkey burger?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
It's surprising. It's good. There's a little bit of that kind of like shock value of it's an ostrich burger, you know?
Yeah. I tried to convince some people. We're in New Orleans right now at the SBC annual meeting. I tried to convince my team last night to get French fries that had alligator on top. We didn't get it.
You didn't get it.
It was too much.
Oh, man. Sorry.
Too much.
Welcome to the bonus season of 10 Questions with 10 Pastors. This is 10 Questions with 10 Missionaries. Brought to you by Gateway Seminary. With your host, Tyler Sanders. This episode was recorded live at the 2023 SBC Annual Meeting.
I'm here with Kristen Lowry, who is an international orphan care consultant with Sin Relief. Sin Relief is a kind of partnership program, I guess, right? Between IMB and
NAM. Yeah, so it's a partnership between the International Mission Board and the North American Mission Board to do mercy ministries.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how'd you get involved with this?
Well, that's a long story.
Okay.
I serve the International Mission Board in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And I came over to Kenya as a photographer, but at some point I pivoted. The Lord called me to work with orphans and vulnerable children. So in the course of that, I ended up inheriting an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And when I inherited it, I found out that most of the kids living there actually had parents. So the donors didn't know, the directors didn't know, but I knew the language and I found out. And so what we were able to do was to get a lot of those kids home and then continue with the work of rescuing kids and reuniting the families. But it kind of started me on this journey of learning that most kids in orphanages have parents. And so what I want to do is I wanted to get that message out to Southern Baptist so that they could be at the front of this global movement to get kids home, because I believe that every kid deserves to be in a family.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's a pretty fascinating thing to find out, I imagine.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
Because when I took over this orphanage, I had been assured by the board of trustees, the directors, that all of these kids here were the poorest of the poor.
Mm.
They were the most vulnerable. They didn't have anyone in the world.
Yeah.
And then what happened was that I was there, I was kind of getting my feet on the ground, trying to figure out what was going on. And I went up to a young kid who was in the classroom, and I very delicately in Swahili was like, "I'm so sorry. Like, what happened to your family?"
Mm.
And he looked at me like I was a crazy person. He said, "My mom comes every Saturday." And I was like, "What?" So I found out that his mom did come. She worked at a flower farm, but she couldn't get them in school. She couldn't meet all the bills. So what she did was she felt like she had to bring him and his brother to an orphanage where she knew they would get three meals a day and they would get schooling.
Wow.
And so kind of started me on this journey of trying to get more kids home, because what we could do for a much smaller cost was take him home and help his mom to be able to have those needs met while she was at home and while she had her kids, because she loved her kids.
Wow.
But she made a difficult decision.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. Impossible decision, I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's good. I mean, can you tell me anything else about like the work you're doing overseas? Is that kind of the main thrust of it?
Yeah. So for the last, how many years? 2013 to 2023. That's 10 years.
Yeah.
For the last 10 years or so, I've been working in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an institution in Kenya called Shelter Yetu. And what we do is we rescue boys living on the streets. We provide them with rehabilitation services for 6 months. So that's trauma counseling, it's education, that's healthcare, that's discipleship. We provide them with those services. And then we find out where their family is and start working with their family to see what made them leave home.
Right.
And so we do that. And then when they're both ready to come together, we reunite the child back with his family.
Mm.
So I've been doing that for 10 years. And in doing that, I would get a lot of calls from people who said, you know, I'm supporting an orphanage. Can you go check it out? Or I'd like to start an orphanage. Or what can I do? And so I pitched to Send Relief that I would really like to have a voice in that conversation, the Southern Baptist Convention, and let pastors and churches know how they can help orphans overseas.
Yeah.
Because it's not the ways that we suspect. Like, adoption is amazing.
Right.
International adoption is incredible. And there's children that is the best option for. But right now there's 5.6 million children living in orphanages. And I think last year only 1,800 children were adopted into the U.S.
Wow.
So that's like 0.03%.
1,800?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that number is declining. And
really?
So as great as adoption is, we're not going to adopt our way out of the orphan crisis.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, here's a question that it's a little bit different, okay?
Yeah.
What's like your day-to-day, like how do you prepare day-to-day to do work like this?
That's a good question. So my day-to-day life is thankfully very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 5 kids at home. I've got 3 biological and 2 foster.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes up a good amount of my time. And then I go to the shelter. I live an hour away from the shelter. And I go once or twice a week and do work on the ground, trying to help the staff, trying to help the kids. And then a lot of my advocacy work is in the evening. So we're 8 hours ahead of the U.S. So what's the time I get the kids in bed is when I can start talking with pastors from the States.
Wow.
And that's kind of what it looks like right now.
Is that like Zoom calls?
Calls, yeah. And it's hearing about these pastors' hearts for orphans, what their church is already doing, and seeing how I can serve them.
Yeah.
So some don't have any kind of orphan ministry, but they want to start one. And so I can help them think through what's the healthiest, best way to do that. Some have an orphan ministry and they're not really sure, like, what's the best way to proceed with this.
Yeah.
And I can help them, you know, think through those questions and figure out, like, what's the best thing they can do right where they are.
Yeah. What would you say is a consistent challenge you face in your missionary work?
In my particular work, I think preconceptions and misconceptions are the most difficult thing.
Okay.
We all have preconceptions and we all have misconceptions. And in my line of work, what it is that usually when a church is working with an orphanage or with someone overseas, they've had a long, deep relationship.
Mm.
And they want what's best for those kids. They know those kids. They've been visiting them. They've been supporting them. And they might not be aware that those kids have families or that their support might be keeping them out of families.
I see. Yeah.
And so trying to help people change that mindset while honoring that they have a call from the Lord and that they've been doing all that they can to help orphans.
Yeah.
But just letting them see this other pathway
to
doing that.
Yeah.
Is a challenge.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What would you say is a part of your spiritual gifting that matches your task really well?
I think the Lord has gifted me in mercy, which is really difficult, honestly. So I live in a place with a lot of needs.
Yeah.
And I'm not a slow personality. Like, I don't always stop and think through the implications of things.
Mm.
I just kind of want to do them right now.
Yeah.
So the Lord has very graciously blessed me with a husband who is a bit slower and more thoughtful. Because if it were up to me, you know, every child that I saw who needed a home, I would, come on, we've got space. We can sort this out.
Yeah.
Living in a place where there's a lot of needs and a lot of suffering, I'm very grateful to be there and grateful for how the Lord has allowed us to work in that.
Yeah.
But it can be heavy some days.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's an unexpected lesson you've learned on the field?
Unexpected lesson that I've learned. I think I keep coming back to that I'm not a savior.
Hmm.
I think it is easy anywhere in the world, but especially somewhere where you have resources that people don't, to look at yourself and say, I can, in your heart, sin to rear up its head and to say, I can fix this. And to be able to live open-handedly sharing what you've been given without seeing yourself as the one who's doing the saving, and to continue to point people to Jesus all the time, whether you can help them or not help them or whatever the situation. And it's not something that I didn't have, like, the head knowledge. Like, I knew that.
Of course.
We all know that.
Yeah.
But I think it's something that I have to preach to myself over and over again.
Right, right. And how does that affect, like, your... Like, how do you feel like that affects, like, the way you approach a problem?
I mean, problems need to be addressed first with prayer.
Yeah.
So any problem, you know, you need to ask Jesus. And that's important. And then I was talking to somebody today, and there's some things that you can pray about it. That's cool. That's good. Mm. But Jesus has already given us the answer. So it's not like you need to pray about, like, whether you're going to commit adultery. You don't have to pray about that.
Yeah,
like,
right,
it's pretty
clear
in the Bible. You're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And caring for widows and orphans is kind of in that category too. Mm. Like, we all have that calling.
Yeah,
and whether
that's
supporting them from afar or bringing them into your home or praying for them or whatever that looks like it's a calling that we have as believers.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question or not.
I think you did.
So the scriptures and praying. That might be the consolidated, concise answer for that.
Well, I think that's good because it's like, because part of the shift I think you were explaining is like, how do, you're on the field, you're hands-on doing this. How do I not see myself as the chief, the chief doer in all this, that's really Christ? And so I think anything that's reflecting that reality that, you know, we're really just the hands and feet. Of course, I think that totally answers that. But I imagine that's a tough lesson to learn, and it is a consistent lesson you have to be learning, you know?
It is. And it's, I mean, that's the nature of being a believer and trying to kill sin all the time. And it's good. It's a grace to be able to recognize where you're weak and where you can fall.
Yeah.
And to be surrounded by believers and community where you are that can help point that out to you.
Yeah.
And hold you accountable.
Yeah. So. Could you tell me, kind of a two-parter, how you became a Christian and, like, what was that journey from becoming a Christian to accepting a call to missions?
Yeah. So I didn't grow up in a believing family. My family was not going to church. I didn't know the meaning of Easter growing up, except for the Easter Bunny. But I went to a public school, and there was this girl in my class who pretty much every day would ask me if I was saved. I did not know what that meant. Mm. I was like, I saved? What? And eventually I just told her, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I think you're a crazy person. And she shared the gospel with me, and I got saved. And then had really, really faithful friends and Sunday school teacher in high school that really kind of helped me deepen my faith and take it as my own.
Yeah.
So that's how I got saved. And then from there, I went on to Union University, which was a really great place to grow in my faith. It was a safe place to question and to learn and to grow. And I was studying journalism and photography. And I thought that the journeyman program would be amazing to beef up my photography portfolio. So I was going to go for 2 years. I was going to get some amazing portfolio pictures. And I was going to come back and get a real job. Like, that was the plan.
Yeah.
So I did. I went. I spent 2 years on the field in Kenya and South Africa. And one of the last assignments I did, I had met a young lady whose name was Eunice. And she went every day before work. She was a student, but she was also working. She went every day before work to this group of kids living on the street. It's like 20 or 30 kids. And she bought bananas because that's what she could afford.
Mm.
And she would give them bananas and she would share the gospel with them. And I was like, I'm going to take pictures of this. This is going to be cool.
Yeah.
So I spent about 10 days with her. I would go with her like 4 in the morning. These kids living on the street. She would feed them. She would tell them a Bible story. She would go off to work. And I would just hang out with them the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the last day, I was driving through the city, not a very safe place, and one of these older kids, they're 17 or 18, they've got a reputation in Kenya. They've got a reputation for being very violent, like kind of gang sort of reputation. One of them started knocking on my window, and I freaked out. I was like, what am I going to do? I went to lock the car doors, because that's what you do when somebody's banging on your window.
Mm.
And the Spirit very clearly spoke to me the words of Matthew 25, like, whatever you do unto the least of these, done it to me. I was like, what am I going to do? So I opened the car door, which I don't know if this is not prescriptive for those of you going to Kenya. But I opened the car door and it turned out fine. He took me to where the other kids were.
Yeah.
And then I went back to South Africa where I was living at the time. And for about a month, I could not sleep without thinking about where those kids were sleeping. And I could not have a meal without thinking, what are they eating?
Yeah.
Could not open the scriptures without the Lord reminding me of his heart for the orphan and the vulnerable.
Yeah.
And finally, I was just like stopped and I was like, Lord, do you want me to go back to Kenya? And I had a peace for the first time in like a month. And I was like, this is not a very good decision, Lord. Like, I don't have a social work background. I don't know how to. But I went back and I ended up living with that young lady, Eunice.
Yeah.
And we lived downtown together and were able to minister that same group of kids for a number of years.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was really cool.
And that led you
beyond that.
Yeah.
So Eunice and I were living together and trying to find a place where we could have more than one of these kids at times. So what had happened was we knew these kids. We had a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. We would eat with them on Saturdays and kind of play football, do Bible study. And one of these kids, we were eating with him, and I was just messing around with him. And I pulled off his cap because he always wore a cap. And he had this giant wound on his head where he had been hit by a car.
Oh, man.
And so we said, like, let's take him to the hospital. So we took him to the hospital. They stitched it up. And then we hadn't thought through the plan because when he came out, he was under general anesthesia. And they're like, you can take him home now. And we were like, we can't take this kid back to the streets. Like, that's a death sentence for him. And so we brought him back to our living room.
Wow.
And that kind of opened the door. And for like 3 or 4 years, we ran a like miniature rescue center out of our living room. Mm. And during this time, we were like asking the Lord, like, can we just have like a quarter of an acre somewhere in the city that we could like formally rescue these kids and help get them back home?
Yeah.
And on Christmas Day in 2013, I got a call from a man that my mom had sold a house to in Memphis. And he said, I have an orphanage. Would you like it? And so we were like, okay, okay. So we inherited a 10-acre orphanage with all the infrastructure. And
that's amazing.
That was in 2014. And we changed it from an orphanage to a rescue center.
Yeah.
And I think we've rescued more than 600 kids since then.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So the Lord's been really kind.
Yeah.
Like, it is the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could go back and tell young Kristen, maybe like heading out on that first journeyman stint, what advice would you give her?
What advice? I don't know. I don't feel like I live life with a lot of regrets. There were a lot of hard days during those times, especially the time when I was living with Eunice downtown. We experienced a lot of really terrible things, and it felt very much like, I mean, just a season of death and difficult things. But I wouldn't change any of those, and I wouldn't do anything differently, because now we see the fruits of all that. If we hadn't walked through those days, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing now.
Yeah.
We wouldn't understand the issues on such a deep level. We wouldn't have built between ourselves such a, you know, a deep friendship and trust for one another that we can run together this organization and head up this initiative together. So just trust the Lord is what I would tell myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the moments when things are hard, it's hard to remember that sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think on the other end of things, you can see where he's been faithful and where he's been kind.
Right.
But you wouldn't change him because what a testimony. Like,
How
would we know how good he was unless he had carried us through those
things?
How
else could you get to where you are?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. And my final question, usually this is one of the first questions I ask, but before we started recording, Kristen and Courtney and I, our producer, got into a really long talk on books. So I was wondering if you could tell me what you're reading right now.
So I will tell you right now, I'm reading The Brothers Karamazov.
Yeah? And why are you reading that?
Because I love it and it makes me feel alive.
Okay.
Also, there's an ongoing argument in my home about if it's terrible or not. My husband absolutely hates it. And so I'm reading it, remind myself that it is really good literature. I really like it. But I'm going to add something. Can I add something?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
On the plane on the way over, I watched a movie, which is an old movie. Maybe people have already seen it, but I had not seen it. It's called Lion. Have you seen it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so it's about a young Indian boy who gets lost. When he's like 4 or 5, he gets lost, he gets separated from his family, he gets adopted. into Australia, and it's kind of his journey to going back and finding his family.
Right.
And it broke me. Like, I'm sobbing on the way over from Kenya to Louisiana. But it was also like so encouraging, because his story is that he went to all these places. He ended up in a police station, he ended up in an orphanage, he ended up in all these situations where if somebody had stopped and really made the effort to try to find his family, he could have been spared years of suffering. And it all turned out for good. Like, he had his family, they loved him. But just thinking through that, like, there are 150 million kids living on the streets in the world. That's an estimate. Nobody really knows how many, but it's a lot of children. And we need people, you know, to support those efforts and to be those people who are there, who are caring for those kids and who are saying, like, how can I help you get into a safe home? How can I help you get back home? Instead of, you know, in some instances, looking at their own agenda and what they want to do with them, which is what happened to this child. You know, everybody had their own agenda when they were talking to him. And he desperately wanted to go home, but nobody could hear that and nobody would help him with that. And so it really just kind of broke my heart and made me remember, like, oh, this is why I'm doing this. So it was deeply encouraging and hard at the same time.
A couple of years ago, when I was a seminary student, we had a guest, kind of a lecturer at church. It really wasn't a sermon that he gave. It was like a little lecture. And one of the things he said that really struck with me, he was involved in orphan care as well. He said, one of the ways we should ask whether or not a city is doing well is if children are being taken care of well in that city. And he was British, so he said it way better than that. I think what he said was, is it well with the child? And that question has stuck with me for so long, because it kind of doesn't matter how many great buildings or how clean a city is or a community, like, all these things are kind of superficial if children are not being cared for in that area.
That's so true.
So I guess what I'd like to finish on is if you could tell us a little bit of information of how pastors can learn more about what you do, maybe connect with you and learn more about how they can be involved.
Yeah, for sure. So I would love to hear from pastors. I am available for coaching on how they can work with orphans better overseas or begin working with orphans overseas. Mm-hmm. The first thing they can do is they can email me at children@senderleaf.org. Mm-hmm. And we can set up a time to talk and I can help them. The other thing is that people can give to the Families and Children's Fund with Senderleaf.
Okay.
So they have a fund that is supporting families and children.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
Yeah.
And so they're doing amazing work all around the world, supporting kids to stay in their families. So that can look like feeding programs or school fees or healthcare. And then also we're beginning work to get kids back in families who were in orphanages.
Mm.
So you can support that financially. You can pray for that. And you can reach out. I would love to hear from people.
Perfect. That's wonderful. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys.